Yeah. Check. Keep it alive through these lines I write. I keep it live cause I thrive. I might just blow your mind tonight. I'm so hyped, but it's no hype. From this height, it's direct hits on sight. I'm your type, lend me your ears to show you that there's something in me. I'm not giving up, I'm standing right here, holding these days hostage, and I'll make this my year. We turning fear into love, and the love's in the air. I love doing this cause nothing compares, nothing can share. That same type of feeling when you're feeling them flares. They can't catch it, it's havoc, I rip to a tear. Switch a scenario, my stereos, I leave them impaired. Variables start to change and they're all in my range. I just gotta grab it, it's all mathematics. Every step is drastic, I make it fantastic. I'm trying to take your breath away, asthmatic.
This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, know through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo.
Yeah. Just nod your head with it, so explicit and vivid. Every image is intricate, intimate. I put my all into it, no scrimmage and no rules. I'm a pro tool, hear my heartbeat beating to the vocals. I'm so loco, lost my mind, oh no. It's ponderoso, dope so, no overdose cause it's dope. Yo man, this is house grown, mixed with some milestones. So I let the style flow, down like the Dow Jones. Bringing it with some foul tones, letting the crowd know we getting loud, so it's eardrum rudiments. Yeah, we bring it rude again. Move, little hooligan. Music for tuning in. Full time to the 10. I'm on my clock, like I told you. I'm doing this for dreams. We pursue.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Anti-Media Radio. Once again, with your host, Nick Burnaby, here on UCY.TV, representing the Anti-Media.org. Thank you all for tuning in, and we're super happy to be back with you. Had a nice long weekend. Enjoyed New Year's and did our thing over here in Southern California. Hopefully everyone else had an awesome New Year's celebration and is enjoying your New Year's resolutions, if you made any. Not saying that you had to, but hell, I mean, if you made one, hopefully you keep it and, you know, all that good stuff. If anybody wants to call tonight, we are going to be taking some callers, so make sure you abide by our rules when you call in. The rules are keep your microphone on mute, keep the radio turned off behind you, and when we come to you based on your area code, then you're going to be live on the show, and then you'll be free to talk. If you want to call in, the number is 718-717-8296. We'll probably reannounce that later in the show if we're not getting any callers. But anyway, we have a special show tonight. We have Jake Anderson back in the studio with us here in San Diego, California. What's up, Jake?
Not much, man. I'm back in the saddle. I'm glad to be here, enjoying a couple of New Belgium triple beers, and these were donated from funds from very special people I'd like to do a quick call out to, my parents, Cindy and Steve Anderson.
Awesome, man.
Great people, ardent, voracious anti-media fans, holding down the fort there in New Mexico. So quick shout out to you guys. I love you. And don't vote for Hillary.
Thanks for the beer, Jake's mom. Awesome. You picked a good one. Are they still snowed in over there?
I believe so. I think they got probably some more snow. They're about 3 feet in New Mexico. And, you know, the weather is pretty crazy this year. The East Coast, New York, was like in the 60s, and there was one day at least where LA was colder than New York.
Yeah,
crazy world, Nick.
It's pretty interesting. Yeah, it has nothing to do with the pollution that we're pumping into the air. It has nothing to do with this huge methane leak that's going on over there. And anyway, I mean, we're about to get inundated with huge winter storms here on the West Coast. Here in San Diego, the forecasts are saying it's going to rain all week, which is something that doesn't happen very often. I'd say maybe once every 10 years or so. It's actually a good thing for us because we need the rain. It's a bad thing for all these poor folks that have to drive to work because the southern people in Southern California are notoriously bad at driving in the rain. In fact, some people say they lose their minds when it starts raining. because it's just such a rare occurrence here. But, you know, hopefully people stay safe out there. But we got a great show in store for you tonight. Bunch of things happening around the country. We're going to get into Oregon and that kind of thing. Right now we're joined by our longtime co-host, DB Schwartz. What's up, DB?
Hey, just, dude, just trying to dissect what the hell is going on up there. And really just dismayed at some of the comments from people that were so for BLM and so against these guys, when in reality we're basically fighting the same beast, although people don't see it that way.
Totally agree with you, man.
Yeah, and it's kind of odd that BLM, it's also the acronym for Black Lives Matter movement and stuff, and so we don't want to convolute that with the Bureau of Land Management,
right.
Which is a massive bureaucracy that controls,
and they screw over
50% of the land in the Western United States. For those that aren't in the know on that, yeah, the federal government owns about 600 million acres of land in the United States. That's enough for almost 2 acres a person there. So yeah, we may not have that, what was it, 40 acres and a mule, but there is enough left for like 2 acres and a mule, you know what I'm saying? So.
And they screw with Burning Man too, and make it, they basically, they go out of their way to make it difficult for these lands to be populated by alternative movements and stuff like that. So BLM is, you know, problematic in many ways. Again, Bureau of Land Management, not Black Lives Matter.
Yeah, so let's get into that first, because, you know, that's really what I want to talk about. We have a story up on the anti-media just laying out the facts. And, you know, we're not really choosing sides here or anything like that. And, of course, the Bundys injected themselves into this scenario. And as we all know, they're a very polarizing bunch. Many people in the activist community initially rallied behind Bundy, and I think that was back in 2014, I believe it was. Yeah, April of 2014 when the whole Bundy Ranch thing went down in Nevada. And, you know, there was a good amount of support until the guy came out and said a bunch of racist shit. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, damn, well, who are we supporting here? Some racist asshole, you know? And so, you know, again, after these Bundy guys injected themselves into the scenario, it kind of added a bit of a polarizing aspect to what's going on there. But basically, there's some militiamen that are out there supposedly in support of these ranchers by the names of Dwight and Stephen Hammond, who are facing some pretty, you know, I would say pretty harsh prison sentences of a minimum of 5 years each for the crime of setting fires, which spread from their land onto federal lands. And so that, of course, that is something that probably should have never happened, and maybe there should have been some kind of penalty there. I believe they served several months in jail over that and probably paid a fine for it, which to me seems somewhat fair. I don't know all the details here, but I definitely think 5 years is a bit extreme, and I think that's why a lot of people initially were rallying around these guys. And it first started off as some kind of march with people marching in support of these guys that are about to go to jail. And then after the march was over, these guys, you know, from various militias from around Oregon and around the Northwest kind of decided that they were going to take over some kind of federal building, which isn't so much, it's like some kind of wildlife reserve building that was unguarded, and it was like during a holiday, no one was working there. It wasn't any like hostile takeover or anything. So on that aspect, it was kind of like, oh, come on, guys. Like, couldn't you have picked a little bit of a tougher target there? But I don't want to jump too far into that. To me, I mean, the thing that really has taken me back here is, and I think this is what DB was alluding to a little bit, was the fact that this event has become so polarizing, to the point where you got people online even saying, hey, let's just drone strike these guys. I mean,
and the same people against police brutality, mind you.
Yeah, you know, and so just because this group is made up of mostly white people that are probably a bunch of more or less conservatives and stuff, that does not give a pass for the government to just go and bomb these guys or take them out violently or anything like that. I think that one of the things I'm seeing here is that the country in general has become so polarized and so just blinded by fear mongering and hate that it's like, well, just because someone is different than me politically, or looks different from me, or has different views on outlooks on life or economics or whatever, they just deserve to die. You know what I mean? This is just like, to me, it just blows my mind. Right. What do you think?
It's crazy. Well, I mean, my take on this is, I mean, I'm going to defer to DB for some of the more trenchant information on this. But I was watching CNN when the story broke on, I believe it was Saturday or Sunday. And what struck me is Dan Abrams, who is a tool for CNN, and a specific quote he said, which is, I don't think the media should be aggrandizing and giving these people a platform. So I just hope the media doesn't cover this very much. Meanwhile, CNN is spending 4 or 5 hours on a burning building in Dubai, which is not even terrorist connected. So to me, it's almost the epitome of this media bias, which is what they're going to give time to and what they're not going to give time to. What could be more important right now than discussing the equilibrium between federally owned land and our ability to assemble on this land to make a point? Now, the problem is, of course, that they're armed, and that's the point they're making. But for the love of God, Dan Abrams coming out and questioning whether the media should be covering this, what is the job, what is the role of the media if it's not to cover stuff like this and to engage in a meaningful debate about it beyond just polarizing, they're anti-government. You know, they keep repeating this anti-government, anti-government. Guess what? Most of the country's anti-government. So get used to it, you know?
Congress has a 9% approval rating. So, yeah, I think it's fair to say that 90% of the country is, at least in one way or another, anti-government in some sort.
DB, what's your take, man?
I mean, just from what I've been reading and researching, it's kind of – people have been talking about Agenda 21 and hasn't really – research that it shifted to UN 2030. In other words, within only 14 years, they want to start corralling people into these mega cities, and they're going to set up the surveillance grid. And part of this is BLM kicking off people that have these huge homesteads that are completely independent of the government and don't need them at all, and grow all their own food and control their own communities. And they just can't have that if they're going to have this agenda going first. Secondly is BLM, the Bureau of Land Management, is appropriating a lot of these lands, and they're being basically sold to China. I mean, when you're talking about the dollar collapsing and the money we owe them and the gold we stole from them during World War II, we have to give them back collateral that's real, and that is going to include fracking rights, water rights, I mean, even solar rights on these supposed federal lands, which were just absconded, man, by a corporation masquerading as our federal government through the Federal Reserve Act. So if people don't understand that, if they want to equate these guys to white terrorists or Al-Qaeda or whatever, that's cool. Play into the media narrative. Play into it. Be divided even more. I mean, that's the only way they're going to keep us down, but they're doing a great job of it.
Divide and conquer is the name of the game in Oregon. And looking back to the whole Bundy Ranch situation, I remember there was definitely something in there about who's that senator from Nevada? Harry Reid?
Harry Reid was caught selling land to the Chinese, man.
Yeah, exactly.
For solar farms.
Yeah.
So and wake up. I mean, if it's in Nevada and now it's coming to Oregon, and why do you think, I mean, we've gone over this before, Nick, why is the push there on the coast to disarm? Why do they never focus on the South or even the Midwest? Always the coasts to disarm. I mean, people need to think 10, 20, 30 years ahead. That's where the next steps are coming.
Yeah, there was a pretty documented evidence about Harry Reid working deals, backdoor deals with Chinese companies and, you know, state-sponsored companies and stuff to sell off some of that BLM land to Chinese investors to develop solar farms and things like that. And it happened to coincide with a lot of the land that the Bundys were laying claim to as well. And now some information is coming out regarding this rancher land up in Oregon, that it has gold and other resources that can be found within this, you know, under this land up there and stuff. And, you know, it may be about
a lot more than just what we're being told about ranching and, you know, that kind of thing. But the mining and stuff like that is also a factor that comes into play here.
Yeah, including uranium, actually.
Yeah, there's all kinds of possibilities here. You know, that's the whole takeaway for me. Like, you just have to see, you know, it could be anything. There's all kinds of, who knows, you know.
So we have Claire Bernish on the line with us, and we also have Cassius Methel on the line, two of our awesome journalists on the anti-media.
Hey, dudes.
What's up?
So yeah, there was just a quick point, and then I won't say any more about this. There was a time probably, I've said multiple times on the show, I'm a recovering Democrat, and I think what comes with being a Democrat is closing yourself off to a lot of different kinds of movements. And one transition I've taken in the last 5 years is that there was a time when I would have I despised right-wing militias, and there are some reasons to despise some right-wing militias, but there's got to be a way, and I'm working on an article about Ralph Nader's new movement to connect the left and the right. It's called Unstoppable. Connecting, uniting the left and the right to take down the corporatocracy, or something like that. That's not the title, but it's close to that. And there's got to be a way for us to all stand up. There's a great meme, which is the elites playing a board game on the backs of the people. And the idea is, if we all stand up, the board topples and their game goes. If we all stand up, but in order for us all to stand up, we have to form some kind of decentralized movement of solidarity and uniformity. And part of that...
What are our common denominators? Yeah.
Right.
Exactly. And I agree with you, man. And this thing in Oregon is falling right into this divide and conquer game. Very frightening. It's the same exact tactic used against Black Lives Matter. And I wouldn't doubt that some of these people out there some of these militiamen out there probably think that Black Lives Matter activists are terrorists. And I wouldn't doubt that some of the Black Lives Matter activists are calling these guys terrorists.
That's sad, man.
So, you know, the problem here is that, I think that this kind of language and this kind of narrative, it just further drives these groups away from each other. When in fact, there could be some common ground, as you were saying, Jake, that could be found there. You know, where these two groups could join together, even though they may have different causes and come from a different political background, may have a different agenda, where they can find common ground in opposing, you know, the federal government, to say the least, if not local police forces and things like that. But this kind of language that is being pushed out there, and I've seen it from several mainstream media outlets today, basically saying that it's time to start calling these guys what they are and calling them terrorists, but they haven't killed anybody. You know what I'm saying? They haven't done any terrorism. Just because they're armed and they're staging, you know, occupying a building does not equate to terrorism. You know, this is a textbook civil disobedience while being armed.
The domestic terrorists are the police officers. I'm not going to be any more nuanced about it than that.
Well, look what they did to MOVE in Philly. I mean, in 85.
Oh, yes.
You know, all you got to do is look at that. Look at Kent State. Look at Waco. I mean, look at any time people stand up, dude. So BLM, meaning Black Lives Matter, and any movement for people to have equality should lead to solidarity. And it's proof positive that people are still under the sway of this corporate media, man, that they're allowing this division to happen. Yeah, they're not the same people. Yeah, they're fighting for different things, but they're fighting the same enemy.
And, dude, even to a certain extent, I'm a little bit reluctant to give too much support to William Cooper, because I disagree with him on some stuff. But even to a certain extent, solo figures that have come out and said, come to my land and I'm going to shoot you or whatever. I mean, there's the media, and the media is complicit in this, and that's why I came down hard on Dan Abrams. Is the media creates the narrative, and then people buy into it. And what it is fear of anti-government establishment, anti-government sentiment. And the sad thing is, what they don't realize is they can't stop it. That's why Ralph Nader called his thing unstoppable, because the masses, the 99%, when we stand up, it's unstoppable. They won't be able to stop us. It's through the media and through these tools of divide and conquer that they do this to
us. Yeah, and you know, through the right-wing media, there's been a campaign of division against Black Lives Matter and against police accountability, and through the right-wing media, you've seen a bunch of police worship lately and that kind of thing, and that serves as a divisionary narrative. And then now with this thing going on in Oregon, you see the exact same narrative coming from the left-wing media and you know, demonizing these white militia dudes up in Oregon, calling them terrorists and that kind of thing. And Claire, you've been talking about this for the last few shows. In fact, on our New Year's show, the last show we did, one of the things that you said that you hope for in the new year is that there's going to be hopefully less division. What do you make of what's going on in Oregon?
Well, this is at least what's going on with people talking about what's going on in Oregon. It seems as if this is divide and conquer, and even, you know, the kind of self-perpetuation of that. The very people that claim to be against, you know, government control and power and oppression and all this are like saying, well, these guys are ridiculous and the government needs to go in and take them out. It's like, well, why did your narrative suddenly change? You know, you don't have very strong values, if you know, or you know, opinions on something, if you're going to suddenly change it according to you not agreeing with whatever group it is that is having the problem. And this is, I think, a classic case of where people, if they don't like whatever the group's message is, they automatically target them instead of seeing that, you know, this group doesn't like the government any more than the rest of us do. So there's the common ground that we have, and yet everybody's like focusing on the differences instead of where our, you know, common thought is.
Exactly.
This is a perfect example.
And so, you know, the people that fall under the right-wing propaganda are saying, okay, well, I can't tell you how many comments I've seen on threads on Fox News and InfoWars and other places like that where it's like, you know, something about Black Lives Matter. It's like the cops need to go in there and just gun them down, or the people, if they're blocking a road, people need to just run them over. You know what I mean? And now, and then people on the left will see that and be like, wow, I can't believe people have such violent tendencies.
Yeah.
And it's like, God, these people are crazy. Yeah. And then the exact and then it's like, oh, there's a right-wing militia occupying some federal building, some wildlife reserve. And it's like, well, we need to just gun them all down. And Montel Williams is saying they need to be disemboweled. And
well,
stuff.
They didn't vote for Obama, so we should go kill them.
Yeah.
Basically.
And why is Montel bootlicking of all people?
Yeah, man. I wrote an article about this last night. I stayed up all night and wrote the longest article I possibly, well, not, you know, just for long, but I wrote an article about this last night. And, yeah, I pretty much just focused on the fact that this is a media circus. That's where I want to focus my attention. The article is titled Oregon Militia Situation, Beware of a Media Circus.
Nice.
It says, be wary of an ongoing media circus. The media circus has spiraled and tumbled into a great big heaping mass of confusion and fear, dramatically taking a turn for the stupid in late 2015 when several mass shootings occurred. War in Syria began to escalate further and spill into mainstream coverage. Donald Trump appeared, etc. So I basically just said, be wary of forming quick opinions. It's so easy to form a quick opinion.
Yeah,
but, you know,
exactly, man.
That's a great way to put it, I think, quick opinion.
The other thing here is that we can't, first of all, you know, we got to keep in mind who this divide and conquer stuff benefits. We're coming into an election right now. It's election year at this point. Now that it's 2016, unfortunately, it's election year. So we're going to have to see a lot of this dumb shit on TV about the elections and the campaign ads and
Nick,
all
are you
that.
Disparaging our national elections?
Apparently, yeah.
Oh, okay, all right.
So, you know, first of all, you can't discount the distraction factor here. This stuff works as a great distraction, what's going on in Oregon. So that's one thing. But the main thing here is that the divide and conquer stuff couldn't come at a more timely point, because I think that as this new election, this election comes in, the new whoever becomes the next president, we all know that the world is going to hell in a handbasket. I mean, we're looking at the very real prospects of a large-scale war going on somewhere in the Middle East, between either proxy or directly between major powers, including Russia, China, and the United States. England and, you know, the rest of NATO and all that stuff. You know, and so this divide and conquer stuff, it's obviously going to continue on much stronger throughout 2016. Obama's getting ready to do his executive order on gun control, which there's a bunch of different theories on how, you know, strict it's going to be, or that it's going to be toothless.
It's
or that
a pretty
it's,
weak thing.
Okay, you know, but at the same time, it's being painted as this huge gun grab, and but other people are saying, oh, it's not strong enough, and, you know, I mean, this is just more and more of this divide and conquer stuff, and so we're being set up here for when the in 2016 the new election happens, the new president takes place, whoever gets elected is going to be sitting upon probably one of the most divided populations America has ever seen,
yeah.
or at least in the last 50 years since the 60s, you know, and since the civil rights movement, which was a very divided time. So the next president's going to be presiding over a very divided population. But what does that mean? Well, that means that they're going to be able to get away with almost whatever they want, because there's not going to be anybody willing to make a coalition to put a stop to anything that the executive branch or that the government decides to do. You know what I mean? So we're going to we're going into 2016, you know, like, 2017. Where we're as a public, if we remain this divided, we're going to be completely helpless and completely at the will of the government.
Well, what they say with propaganda, some of the most effective propaganda is not like trying to control people necessarily, but confuse them. If they can't gain control over large amounts of people, they just confuse them, which basically means divide them up into little groups and have them infight, which is exactly what's going on.
Right. Yeah,
exactly. Absolutely. Exactly. And we all know that the legislative branch doesn't represent us anymore. Congress doesn't represent us. We're effectively an oligarchy in the United States. The only remaining check and balance to the system is popular public outrage, which is now, yeah, there is a popular public outrage, but it's all pinned against itself. It's not pinned against, it's right. No longer going to be pinned against the government. Because, yeah, these guys in Oregon are supposedly making a stand against the government. Well, the government doesn't have to do anything because their own countrymen are eviscerating them.
It's like puppets whose strings have been entangled purposely from above. But the puppets are blaming each other for getting their wires entangled. So they're all ensnared and fighting and whatnot. But they're blaming each other even though the wires were purposely entangled from above. There's my Bean John. There's my Bean John Malkovich reference.
That's
for the
a perfect
night, yeah.
analogy there. Anyway,
that's what I keep saying. It's like the people are doing it. Sorry, I just think the people are doing the job of the government for them. All the government needs to do any longer, because everybody feels so up in arms against each other, they just throw something out that they know will be divisive and let the people take over, and the people do, and everybody fights and just divides, and it's ridiculous.
Yeah, and also so, with the media, you know, we all know the mainstream media has lost a lot of its influence and stuff, but, you know, we've talked about this recently on the show here, is that now the people in general out here in the U.S. are doing the job of the whole distraction stuff with the media. They no longer need Fox News to distract them anymore. I mean, you just go on Reddit and you look at cat pictures all day. You know what I mean? And so, you know, we're in the age of information, where information is finally, at least for the time being, and in some countries, including here in the United States, information is for the most part liberated. And people can access information. They can go and search out stuff that they want to learn about and find out about history. Like, for instance, like with Nikola Tesla, something you weren't taught about in school, you can go out and find out about it now on the internet. But unfortunately, you know, in many ways, people are just distracting themselves with a bunch of menial stuff instead of going after this information that for the longest time throughout history has been kept under lock and key. And, you know, you got people that have died for this kind of information, including like people like Aaron Schwartz, and people put their lives on the line, like Edward Snowden, Chelsea Manning, to put this information out there. But you don't see people going and searching out WikiLeaks very often. Yeah, sure, there are some people that do, but you see a lot more people looking at cat pictures than you see them looking at WikiLeaks. So I think the people, as you said, Claire, not only are we doing the government's job for it, but we're also taking care of the mainstream media's job as well, which was formerly to distract people. And yeah, they still play a role in the distractions, but, you know, we're distracting ourselves at this point. You know,
yeah, they no longer have to like guide the whole narrative. They just throw a bone out there and everybody runs with it.
Confusion comes in every genre possible, every single genre. it could be spiritual confusion, you know, theories of spirituality that are dead ends and ultimately don't lead anywhere productive or grow people. There's a million dead ends, you know. So the bottom line is we have to recognize a dead end idea, you know.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, I'm sure there's plenty of opinions out there. We're not going to take any calls on this topic just because I don't want to spend any more time on it. We've already gone a half hour on this thing. Anybody wanting to sound off, send us an email on theantimedia.org. You can go to the contact page and email us there. I know there's so many opinions on this whole thing going on with Oregon that it's going to be hard for anyone to come to agreement on. But there's a bunch of other stories here. And first, I want to go back to Claire here, because Claire, you helped not break this story, but you really helped bring it some national attention. It's the story about this huge methane gas leak going on out there and out here in California, in Southern California. Not affecting us here so far in San Diego, but it is affecting people in Los Angeles. And it's the Aliso Canyon Energy Facility. And there's this giant methane gas leak going on. And as of now, there's still nothing to be done about it. They don't think they're going to be able to stop it for several months. And even then, they don't know if it's actually going to work or if it's going to, you know, if the fix that they have is going to be successful. But, you know, there's a bunch of, you know, thanks at least partially to Claire writing that great article about what's going on over there and turning it into a national narrative. There's now a lot of coverage, and now there's people looking into it. And now there's even a real-time leaking methane tally going on here.
Claire, you hit this story before most of the mainstream media did, honestly. Much respect.
Thanks. I heard about it. I can't remember where I saw it originally, and then I started looking into it, and I could not believe that nobody was talking about this, because for one thing, this is very, very close to LA, which, you know, there's a very large number of people right there, and the amount of methane that's actually spewing out of this reserve is rather incredible, and
it's
coming out with the force of a volcano, so...
Yeah, and at this point, there's 77,500 metric tons of methane that have leaked out since October 23rd, and that equates to about 6.5 million metric tons of carbon dioxide. We have a article up on the Antimedia with the real-time tracking of this leak.
Wow.
And it's pretty ugly stuff. And, you know, this methane is much worse than the emissions that come from cars and even from, you know, diesel trucks and a lot of other, you know, fossil fuel derived pollution. So this leak is very, very concerning.
And yeah,
the fact that it more or less went under the radar for a long time, like nobody was covering this thing until we helped kind of make it viral and turn it into a national narrative here. But, you know, this is and many people have called for, you know, oh, there's not enough oversight and stuff, but it's so true. Like, we didn't even know that there was a problem here. It's kept under wraps. I don't know if they were purposely hiding it or the media was instructed not to cover it or whatever, but now it's pretty much busted wide open. It was trending on Facebook for like 5 days or something like that, and thankfully now it's getting the attention it deserves, and hopefully that'll put a little bit of a hurry up on the fix for this. But, you know, I mean, Claire, can you tell us any more about this?
Well, for one thing, methane is, although it isn't as long lasting in the atmosphere as carbon dioxide, it's 72 times more effective of a greenhouse gas. So it actually holds in more pollution and more everything else. You know, it's not just a matter of climate change, whatever your thoughts on that, anybody. But it's a really, really dangerous thing to have spewing into the atmosphere at this rate. And they can't just go in and dump cement into the well that has cracked, which is what they would normally do, because it's too far underground. It's like thousands of feet underground, so they don't even know exactly where the crack is, and they have to find it. And the pipe that's cracked, or at least the casing around it, is supposedly only about 7 inches in diameter, so this is quite a chore.
Yeah, I mean, this thing is just so huge, and to think that it can take place right next to a city the size of Los Angeles, it's just really, really concerning. And, you know, this isn't the only major environmental issue going on right now. In fact, there's a lot of other ones going on. Claire, you covered another topic regarding something going on over in St. Louis, or a little north of St. Louis in Missouri. But there's apparently there's a nuclear waste dump that's it's already been leaking for a long time, and that's concerning on its own. Now there's this underground fire. I mean, this is like just right out of like an action movie or something. There's an underground fire at a landfill that's bordering next to this nuclear waste dump, and the fire is burning its way towards the nuclear waste. At the same time, they're getting like record amounts of like rainfall, and it's flooding out this nuclear place and leaking it into the Missouri River. I mean, what the hell's going on over there?
They should throw some spiders in there just to see what happens.
Spiders, a couple poisonous snakes.
Yeah.
So the atomic waste from the Manhattan Project was originally illegally dumped in this landfill right outside of St. Louis. And then a company was supposed to take it over and manage it and stuff, but the area was never meant to hold radioactive waste. So it's ostensibly been leaking for like 42 years in the time it's been sitting there. And it looks like it's fairly dangerous levels of different radioactive material. So it's leaking out from there. This underground fire at a landfill that's right next door is probably closer than 900 feet away from the radioactive waste, and the fire has escaped. It went past two barriers that were supposed to stop it. So in all this testing to try to figure out the extent, because the radioactive waste was illegally dumped, they don't know the extent of where it actually borders, like where it actually is, and they don't know exactly where the fire is either. So, you know, when the two will meet, they're not even sure. They don't even know if it actually has happened yet. And it's possible that it has. And if it hasn't, when it does, nobody knows. None of the scientists or experts or anybody really knows exactly what will happen. So this is all very much up in the air.
Oh, this is a story that you got to read up on, because there's no way we can cover it all on the radio. The title of the article is "The Looming Environmental Disaster in Missouri That Nobody Is Talking About." And even to this date, it's still not getting enough media attention that it should be. It did fairly well in the anti-media, but this is another story that, just like what's going on in Los Angeles, should be getting national attention, and maybe a little less on the whole thing in Oregon and the whole divide and conquer thing, a little more on something like this. And the other thing, too, here is that not only over in L.A., back to the methane leak, not only are they dealing with that, but they've got a nuclear disaster of their own on their hands over there in the Simi Valley, which is just also on the north end of Los Angeles, where, you know, they've got a major nuclear fallout that's been laying in the soil over there for the past like 40 years as well. And there's a bunch of cancer clusters and things like that going on. And so Los Angeles is really being inundated with not only this methane leak, but they're also sitting, you know, a lot of those people are living amongst, you know, radioactive elements in their dirt, in their houses, you know. And so you've got kind of a environmental brew of catastrophe going on in Los Angeles. And keep in mind, it's basically the second most populous area in the entire country. It may be it's probably the single largest metropolitan area in the country.
But Trump said that's what plants crave.
Oh yeah, that's right. Plants create.
No.
They need the plants need the electrolytes, right? But no, according to Trump, Muslims are the problem here. Anyone that saw his, I didn't even want to talk about this.
We're gonna build a wall. It's gonna be huge. We're gonna win again.
Yes,
the wall. The
you're a loser.
For it. It's gonna be huge, huge.
You know, and Trump made put out his first campaign ad today, and he said he confirmed that he wanted to ban Muslims. And second of all, and this is the most ironic part of it, is he had this video of brown people running across like a field or something, and he was trying to make it seem like they were Mexicans. The problem was that the footage that he used was from Morocco. Like, he used footage from Morocco, and he was like, oh, we're going to stop the Mexicans, we're going to make them build a wall, and they're going to pay for it.
All foreigners are equally terrifying, so.
Yeah. Yeah, so.
According to Trump.
Trump's an idiot, but he may very well win the Republican nomination, which I guess isn't saying too much. But, oh, man. Just so stupid. Yeah, this thing in Missouri, I encourage everyone to go look this up on the anti-media, and hopefully other outlets have covered this, and I'm sure there's been plenty of aggregation of this thing. Google it, find it, and if you live in the area, just keep an eye out. Maybe go visit InfoWars website, get yourself some iodine pills. Hate to make a joke of it, but shit. So that brings us to Jake, man. Jake, we published an awesome op-ed from you, I believe it was on Saturday, about robots, AI. I mean, robots and AI, they've been in the news a bunch lately. I mean, what's the guy from Tesla? I forget his name now. The CEO?
Musk.
Elon Musk has been kind of coming out and saying, dude, we gotta prepare against this AI. We got to make sure the AI is not going to kill us all. Even Stephen Hawking has been like concerned about AI, at least in some ways. I think Stephen Hawking is more or less concerned who owns the AI, because he's concerned that it's going to be the oligarchs that are going to own it. And shit, by all means, it looks like that's probably going to be the reality of the situation. And that's kind of what you touched on here in your article, Jake, about how soon robots will have more rights than humans. And at first look, I was like, wait, no, this can't be. There's no way in hell robots are going to have more rights than we do. I mean, shit, this is the land of the free. We're the most free people in the world. We bomb all these other countries that aren't free.
We're great. Yeah.
But you made some great points in this article, man, and it really does
speak. I think it's a brilliant article, by the way. I really, really like this.
Thanks.
Yeah, I agree with you. And Jaime, who's in studio here helping us with the video, agrees as well. We were all really dumbfounded by Jake's article, and really amazing. And I encourage everyone, go down to the antimedia.org and read this article. Soon robots will have more rights than humans. But anyway, Jake, tell us a little bit about this, man, because it gives us a glimpse into the next 5 and 10 years, because it really does seem like, I mean, shit, we're talking about self-driving cars right now, right? Google's got its own self-driving cars. Apple's going to come out with its own self-driving car in the near future. They just announced they're partnering with Ford. The workplace is being dominated by robots. Amazon is most of Amazon's manual labor is now taken over by robots. In the next 5 to 10 years, I wouldn't be surprised if at least 20% to 40% of the existing human manual labor is replaced by robots in corporate America. I mean, what's going on, man?
Well, yeah, I mean, the crux of my argument is I don't want to get into too much of a scientific analysis of artificial intelligence. There's plenty of authors that can do that better than I can. My focus, my interest at least, is how corporatism and the corporatocracy is going to intersect with strong artificial intelligence, because it's going to happen. We have Ray Kurzweil now working for Google, and strong artificial intelligence is going to happen. In fact, the Turing test, which of course is the rubric by which we gauge whether artificial intelligence is intelligent, I don't know, it's a very dubious metric, but it's been surpassed now. There was a software program by the name of great name called Eugene Goosman. That's the name of the computer program, but it passed the Turing test. And anyway, the crux of my argument is that what we're dealing with here is personhood and rights. And what we've seen in the last decade is, well, more than a decade, that's a ridiculous statement. This has been a long evolution of corporate personhood. But with Citizens United, the Supreme Court ruling, and with TPP, the Trans-Pacific Partnership that's about to come out, what we're seeing is a outsourcing of the defining of human rights to corporations. And so that's the crux of my argument, which is that ultimately artificial intelligence, strong artificial intelligence. Now, I'm not talking about – we already have weak algorithmic artificial intelligence.
Yeah, like when you go on Google and it autofills for you and you talk to Siri, and Siri's like, oh, yeah, asshole here.
No. Right, right, exactly. Siri, how long will I live? You know, yeah, anytime you do something like that, that's weak algorithmic artificial intelligence. That's not what I'm talking about. But it is instructive in understanding what strong artificial intelligence is going to be like, which is it's going to be sentient intelligences of the future. They're going to be owned by the government and by corporations. Now, why is this important? Well, we've seen pretty systematically that corporate rights are more important than human rights in the current geopolitical atmosphere, particularly in America. Government-owned property, corporate-owned property, is going to be more important than human rights. Two examples.
And it already is, right? I mean,
it already is.
For the most part, I mean, property already takes credence over top of human rights in many, many ways.
Absolutely. And the article stemmed from an article I found the name of the article is called "Law Professors Argue Future Plausibility of Robots Earning Free Speech Rights." Say that five times fast. But the article was law professors arguing whether or not future artificial intelligence is going to have First Amendment free speech rights. Now, this got me thinking. It got me thinking about in the future, who owns the strong artificial intelligence and what their rights will be. Now, I posed two hypothetical questions in this argument in this article. And the first one is, okay, this is open to debate. Hypothetical question I'm going to throw your way. Who is more likely to face a criminal charge? A cop, a police officer, vandalizes a Google office, steals some sensitive information, sells it to WikiLeaks, our hackers, okay? Or a cop who guns down a black man? Who is more likely to face criminal charges?
Exactly. I think that, you know, as we've witnessed with Tamir Rice, and he wasn't even a black man, he's a black boy.
Right.
A 12-year-old boy. The cops were not charged gunning down this 12-year-old black boy.
Right. So let's fast forward 20 years to the future now. The next question, 20 years, maybe 30 years into the future. You have a sentient Amazon delivery drone. He's going to deliver the notebook to you and a DVD, right? And he's sentient, so he's dealing with he's doing customer service. He's doing all of it. Let's say you didn't order the notebook. You ordered another movie. Back to the Future. You get mad. You shoot the drone down. Now, is this going to be considered murder? I submit to you that it will be. And the reason I say that is because corporate and government-owned artificial intelligence robots will enjoy more secure human rights than humans themselves. And the reason is because with AI, you're going to have big money, proprietary source code, brand recognition, and possibly national security information on the line. And these are demonstrably more important to the powers than be than human rights. That's the crux of my argument. It's hypothetical. It's an op-ed, opinion editorial. But I firmly believe that I am right in this, and it scares the living hell out of me. What do you guys think about that?
Don't worry, man. They're developing the girlfriend robot soon.
DB, you would want one of those.
Right. So if you get into an argument with this sentient sex doll, and you kill her, is that sentient sex doll going to have rights? I would argue that they should and will. Now, here's the question. When you file the civil lawsuit against the sentient sex doll, is the sentient sex doll going to collect the money, or is the corporation that created the doll going to get the money? It's going to be the corporation. Now, until AI develops a way to change their own source code, and, you know, I don't want to get too science fiction here with you guys, but the fact of the matter is we have seen a transition of what constitutes human rights already. We don't need to get into science fiction and robots and artificial intelligence to talk about the changing of human rights. Corporations have already done that.
What was the famous quote from good old Mitt Romney? Corporations are people, my friend.
Corporations are people. We've seen this transition of personhood, and this is extremely important to my argument. And it's
corporations are already free speech.
Right.
Under current law, Citizens United and all that good stuff, corporations are considered free speech. You know what I'm saying? And so if corporations are already allotted that human right, free speech is a human right. If it's allotted to a corporation, well, what's to say that a product of that corporation won't be offered those same rights?
Absolutely. And in my opinion, human rights should include universal healthcare, universal education, food, and water. I believe all people, we have the ability to feed and clothe and house every single person on the earth 100,000 times over. Well, maybe not 100,000, but many times over. But we're not doing it. Why? Because of private property.
Good thing Obama passed Obamacare, so we all have universal health care. Oh, shit, that's right. I don't even have insurance.
Now, to his credit, he tried. He couldn't. But, yes, I don't want to get into a debate on Obamacare
let's pass on that.
The fact is, to me, in my opinion, and this is debatable, but I believe that health care and education and water and food are human rights. Now, are those going to be more important to corporations and government than their incredibly high propriety artificial intelligence? My guess is no. So in that sense, my argument would prove right, which is that robots, and by robots I mean artificial intelligence, are going to have more human rights than humans.
Yep, and it's all rolling into Freakonomics, which is just trying to stave off the zero-sum game, because humanity as a whole is extremely fragile, weak, and only has a 30 to 40-year window of peak productivity, whereas a robot has what, Jake, 500, 1,000 years?
Who knows with these future robots that are able to self-repair and are sentient and they can, you know, they break something, they can repair it themselves, you know? And so, you know, this article here is kind of like, to me, it's kind of like, oh, this is almost like a utopian scenario for what the future could truly hold. That is, if the fears of Elon Musk and all the other 1,000 scientists that signed on to this letter voicing concern about AI's threat to humanity in general, you know, because the other concern about AI is that it takes a turn even worse, and it starts to become the supreme organism on Earth and starts dominating humans.
Artificial intelligence as you guys are a danger to the Earth. Oh, wait a minute. No, humans aren't a danger to the Earth. You guys are wrong.
this totally reminds me of 2001, A Space Odyssey and HAL. And I mean, I just, it freaks me out.
And it puts the push for transhumanism to a logical conclusion, because get this. You release the thing that was in several movies with the nanobots going around and eating all organic matter. Well, if the elite have already transitioned to non-organic shells for their consciousness and just kill off all organic life like it seems like they want to do anyway, well, then it fits right in.
Taking it to the next level, DB.
You know, we got this viral article that we published back in August by John Vibes about Android Dick.
Yeah, it's a great article.
Don't get me wrong. This is not a porn article.
No, it's not.
It's not any kind of amateur porn by the anti-media or anything like that. It's an article about this robot that they started building back in 2005. And this is like 11 years ago. There's a short documentary on PBS, on the Nova show on PBS, about this robot. And this show was in 2011. And they'd already made this pretty advanced Android by the name of Dick, and the Android was able to talk and stuff, and it was very human-like, and the videos there embedded on the anti-media. But one of the things that this robot said when they asked him, you know, what are you gonna do in the future? Like, should I be afraid? He said, "Don't worry." And this is a quote from the robot.
Right.
"Don't worry. Even if I evolve into Terminator, I will still be nice to you. I will keep you warm and safe in my people zoo where I can watch you for old time's sake."
Yes.
And so, I mean, dude, like,
And there was a newer article, and I meant to write about this. An AI said the goal of AI is to live forever. And look, we're about to enter an age. We're going to live through an age that's nothing could prepare us for what we're about to go through in terms of the ascendance of a corporatocracy and artificial intelligence. And it strikes back to the original issue we were talking about, which is being able to band together and talk about these issues, because humans have failed historically. We're going to continue to fail. There's a new species that's going to come, and we're going to create them, and they're going to say, look, you guys are screwing the planet up. Get your shit together, or we're going to take you out. Now, are we going to be able to... Are we going to be able to acquiesce to that demand, or are we going to arrogantly try and destroy them?
Yeah, then you got the whole Terminator scenario playing
right.
out.
And see, I don't think the Terminator scenario is realistic. I really don't. But that's a different argument, and I want us to, you know, be able to talk about it. I mean, I could talk about artificial intelligence for at least 15 minutes.
Well, we'll do a whole show about artificial intelligence, but you know, we got to talk about these Belgian
yes,
cops that
yeah.
had a damn orgy instead of tracking down terrorists during the Brussels lockdown. Shit. We got a bunch of other stories here that I want to talk about. Saudi Arabia and Iran are ratcheting up tensions over there, man. This is some very concerning stuff, because we got to keep in mind that Saudi Arabia, of course, is the Western-backed superpower, you know, miniature superpower in the Middle East. And Iran is the Russian-backed and kind of Shia-backed superpower in the Middle East. And they're going at it at this point. The Saudis did a mass execution on New Year, and they executed, I think, around 50 people and beheaded them and even crucified some of them. I believe this... Shia cleric was one of the people that was crucified, and the Iranians were very upset about it. The Iranian public are very upset about it. In fact, they got so mad that they stormed the Saudi embassy in Iran and they burned it down. I mean, they literally burned this thing down. And Claire had a great article about this up today. We only have about 2 minutes left, but Claire, what can you tell us about this? Because this is something here that has some very large geopolitical implications.
In with the limited amount of time, I think the most important takeaway of this is that our idiotic alliance, the U.S. government's idiotic alliance with Saudi Arabia, is going to bite us in the ass if we don't let it go very shortly, because, you know, the rest of the world is keen to Saudis. Just horrible human rights abuses, and just, I mean, this is just really bad. And the Ayatollah in Iran basically said that the West was at fault for what Saudi Arabia did in beheading this cleric who was much beloved and very learned and very popular. So this is not good.
And another thing that's very telling is every other Shia country, except for their vassal states, is against Saudi Arabia and with Iran. What does that tell you?
Exactly.
And it's also important to note that there wasn't always this very hostile, you know, kind of rivalry between the Shia and the Sunni. That was also part of the CIA operation going on in Iraq that kind of helped spur that up as well.
Ooh, look, divide and conquer.
And, you know, it goes back also to all the geopolitical stuff going on during the Cold War. And the things that the CIA did to try to undermine the Soviets, you know, in Afghanistan and things like that. A lot of this Sunni-Shia divide has been manufactured, actually, by the West to destabilize a lot of these countries in order to allow us to go and just take the resources. And again, it's very much similar to what's going on with Oregon, divide and conquer. Turn the Shia and Sunni against each other, have them fight each other. Well, then they can't unite against anything that's, you know, doing them harm. And that's exactly the same scenario playing out in the United States. It's been documented that it was used in Iraq following Operation Iraqi Freedom and all that stuff. Keep an eye on it. This thing with Saudi Arabia and Iran is boiling over. Hopefully it doesn't get worse. keep an eye on Turkey and all that stuff. I mean, so much stuff going on in the Middle East. Peace out, Anti-Media Radio.
Yo, here we go, go through the